Dum dum.
Tomorrow all the things were gone I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I'd thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the ones who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the ones who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the ones who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Thank you.
You've made it possible for about 900 more people to be part of this ceremony. We really appreciate it. Let's give you all a round of applause. I also really want to thank the wonderful concert I want to thank those who have given us the wonderful concert this morning. Linda Hines, soloist with the Charlottesville Opera, the Charlottesville Municipal Band, and the U.S. Army Corps. Let's give them a big round of applause. And that first song, both of those beautiful songs the U.S. Army Chorus sang for us, the first one was actually a performance of The Testament of Freedom, which is a compilation of Thomas Jefferson's words put to music. So you've been treated to some really spectacular music this morning. Now I would ask you to take your seats, and the ceremony will begin.
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security.
Good morning. I'm Leslie Green Bowman, and it's my great honor to be the president of the Thomas Jefferson Foundation. Welcome to Monticello. And I really want to thank the Honorable John Charles Thomas, trustee emeritus of the Thomas Jefferson Foundation, who for 29 years has opened this ceremony with that recitation of the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson was only 33 years old when he wrote those immortal words, now among the most famous in the English language. With a stroke of his pen, he articulated a vision for America that would change the course of human history. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. That was actually a radical statement in 1776, and not at all self-evident. Never before had a nation been born out of ideas rather than force, religion, conquest, or ethnicity. In a merely revolutionary document, Jefferson embedded fundamental principles of liberty, equality, and self-government, principles that still bind us together today as Americans. Jefferson foresaw the impact of those ideas, both at home and abroad. In 1795, he wrote, "This ball of liberty is now so well in motion that it will roll around the globe." Today, more than half of the world's nations have a founding document that echo in some way the words and format of the Declaration of Independence, inspired by Jefferson's words. And freedom movements throughout modern history, from women's suffrage to civil rights, have adopted the words from the Declaration as a rallying cry. Each of those movements reminds us that Jefferson's notion of liberty, while visionary for its time, did not extend to all people, not to slaves, Native Americans, women, or men without property. Jefferson could not resolve the fundamental paradox of slavery in an age of liberty. It would take nearly 200 years, a civil war, and the leadership of countless citizen activists to ensure that all Americans could fully exercise their unalienable rights. That work continues today on our shoulders. This morning, we honor every individual who has struggled for freedom in this country or in any country. And we especially honor the hundreds of enslaved men, women, and children who lived and worked here at Monticello, making it possible. The Declaration of Independence is an innately hopeful document. It reflects Jefferson's faith in the capacity of the American people to tackle big challenges and to protect and improve upon the nation's founding promise. From the very beginning, ours has been a nation that requires the active and ongoing participation of its citizens. In just a few moments, more than 70 individuals from 35 countries will take the oath of American citizenship and begin their journey of participation in our community. This is your day. This is the beginning of your American story, and we are privileged and honored to share it with you here at Monticello. On behalf of the trustees and staff, and in cooperation with the United States District Court for the Western District of Virginia, I officially welcome everyone to the 55th annual Monticello Independence Day celebration, the longest-running naturalization ceremony outside of a courtroom. And a warm hello to thousands who are watching online around the world. I'd like to recognize some special guests with us in the audience today. In association with the Presidential Precinct, we are delighted to welcome a group of Mandela Washington Fellows. These 25 amazing individuals are part of the flagship program of the State Department's Young African Leadership Initiative. They're gifted, they're emerging leaders, they are working within their respective nations to create thriving, just, and free societies. They are joined by Andy Robbins, Special Advisor for Global Youth Issues at the State Department. I also want to welcome another international guest, Rector Gian Maria Ajani, President of the University of Turin in Italy. And on a day when we celebrate the many freedoms afforded to us as American citizens, we are especially fortunate to be joined by a leading voice on religious freedom, Ambassador David Saperstein. It's a subject that has, let's give you a round, first of many. It's a subject that has special resonance here at Monticello. Jefferson was an early and ardent advocate for religious liberty. His vision for the new nation included, in his words, a wall of separation between church and state. In 1786, he authored the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, which swept away state support for churches and signaled the beginning of statutory freedom of religion in this country. Jefferson's words would influence the First Amendment of the Constitution, declaring that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And as well, it informed the Supreme Court's understanding of religious liberty. So important was the statute for religious freedom, in Jefferson's view, that it was one of three testimonials he asked to be remembered by on his tombstone just over the hill, along with writing the Declaration of Independence and founding the University of Virginia. I'm certain Jefferson would have welcomed a discussion of religious liberty today of all days when we gather to reflect on what it means to be American. Now, to introduce Ambassador Saperstein, please join me in welcoming the chairman of the Thomas Jefferson Foundation Board of Trustees, Don King.
Good morning. I especially love being up here on the 4th of July. And I thank all of you that had to fight your way up here, and some walked, and you were late, but I hope you will enjoy it and think it was worth your while. It's my privilege to introduce our keynote speaker. Ambassador David Saperstein is the former U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. In this role, he was our nation's top diplomat on issues of religious freedom. For four decades, he also directed the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism. Ambassador Saperstein has led many national religious coalitions. He was the first chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. And in 2009, President Obama appointed him to the White House Council on Faith-Based Partnerships. He is also an adjunct professor at Georgetown University Law Center and a prominent writer and speaker, often asked to comment on religious issues. In 2009, Newsweek magazine named him America's most influential rabbi. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Ambassador David Saperstein to Monticello.
To those of you who do such wonderful work at the Thomas Jefferson Foundation, President Leslie Green Bowman, Chairman Don King, Ann Taylor, and the Foundation's dedicated staff, my profound gratitude for the invitation to participate in this extraordinary, inspiring ceremony, at once so redolent with reverence and awe for the best of America's past, and so pregnant with hope for a still better future. E pluribus unum, three Latin words that became the official motto of the seal of the United States of America. Out of many, one. That is America. Out of many, one. A nation with diverse native populations, enriched with refugees and migrants from virtually every other nation on the face of the earth. It is not an exaggeration to note with pride that more people from more nations have chosen to come to America to live a life of meaning and purpose than to any other nation, attracted not only by our material opportunities, but by our values and our freedoms. So here on this birthday of this nation, we rejoice in celebrating with you, who will become our newest citizens, as you are imbued with the same rights and responsibilities of every American citizen, no matter where your place of birth. I know that many of you faced obstacles far greater than a broken down bus blocking the road in your journey here to the United States. You will help write the next chapter of America's history. And as your children and children's children grow up in this land of freedom and opportunities, some of them will surely be the good neighbors, the doctors, scholars, and scientists, the elected officials, poets, and religious leaders who will bring manifold gifts and contributions to enrich your communities, your new nation, and just perhaps the world. From 35 countries you have come, bringing your individual wisdom, talents, skills, your poetry, your music, your literature to enrich America. You bring new ways of thinking of how we can address old problems. Through all this, you add such vibrant and colorful threads to the luminous tapestry that is America. E pluribus unum, out of many, one. Allow me to frame Jefferson's contributions and America's uniqueness just a bit differently from many of my predecessors who spoke at this event, speaking not so much of my own family's immigration saga, but as a rabbi of what America has meant to the Jewish people. Prior to the founding of the United States of America, the rights in Western civilization enjoyed by individuals were in the main rights given by some ruler or state to an economic, political, or religious group to which the individual belonged. These were group rights. Thus, in many lands, Jews had lesser rights than other groups, although in most were tolerated and lived in comparative safety. Yet in too many other places, Jews were the quintessential victims of religious persecution, facing discrimination, harassment, attacks, pogroms, and too often, they were the paradigmatic refugee community, victims of ethnic cleansing, forced time and again to flee, looking simply for a warm welcome, for safety and freedom. America was different. And what a difference that made for all minorities. The genius of America, the genius of Thomas Jefferson, was to flip the relationship of the individual and the state on its head, asserting that the rights we enjoy come not from the state, but from within. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Of course, today we hear that gender-specific language to convey that all people are created equal. Jefferson's central point was that it is not the role of the state to grant these rights, but rather to secure those God-given rights. As he wrote in 1786 in that groundbreaking Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom, no man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship, place, or ministry whatsoever, nor shall otherwise suffer on account of his religious opinions or beliefs, but that all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinions in matters of religion. This was a radically different view of the concept of fundamental rights on which the later, that were later embodied in our Bill of Rights, beginning with the First Amendment securing of those rights. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. And we celebrate these rights not just in the abstract. We celebrate them because without them, you cannot have the free marketplace of ideas where policies can be tested and truth can rise to the surface. Without this, democracy cannot flourish. That the two clauses of our Bill of Rights focus on religious freedom is no surprise. The founders believed that these freedoms and the freedom of conscience that inhered in them made all other freedoms possible. And Jefferson strongly affirmed that understanding in his famous 1802 letter to Danbury Baptist. He wrote, "I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." It is precisely that wall, keeping government out of religion, that allowed religion to flourish with a diversity and robustness and strength in America unmatched in any other democratic country in the world today, matched only by India. More people believing in God here, more people going regularly to worship, more people holding religious values central to their lives. And this wall is indispensable to securing the distinctive religious comity, friendship, respect that exists in America, requiring that all religions be treated equally, with the government favoring none and disfavoring none, protecting as well the right not to believe. This comity is vital, since America is the most religiously diverse nation in the history of the world, and the last thing we need is the religious divisions and strife that has plagued so much of the world. Indeed, sociologists tell us that there are 2,000 religions, denominations, and sects in our country. And yes, I know what you were thinking. 1,900 of them, I am sure, are in California. But this is a uniquely diverse nation that remains united, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. It was precisely the confluence of the three religion clauses of our Constitution. No religious test for office, no establishment of religion, no infringement on religious freedom, that for the first time in all of human history created a nation in which the rights and opportunities of a citizen would not depend upon their religious beliefs, their religious identity, or their religious practices. As Jefferson had written in the Virginia Statute, our civil rights have no dependence on our religious opinions any more than our opinions in physics or geometry. Or as Uriah Levy, the scion of the Jewish family that brought and preserved Monticello where we sit for 90 years out of respect for Jefferson, said in 1832, he did so much to mold our republic in a form in which a man's religion does not make him ineligible for political or governmental life. By the mid-20th century, these promises began to be more fully realized as a series of robust Supreme Court decisions matched with acts of Congress and a range of civil rights legislation created effective barriers against the discrimination toward protected categories of religion, race, national origin, age, gender, and more recently, disability, and increasingly, sexual orientation and gender identity. Because of these achievements, there are today in America a couple of 100 million women and minorities of all kinds who enjoy rights and opportunities about which their great-grandparents could have only dreamed. And as a result, for American Jews, this nation has given us, as it has countless minorities, more rights, more freedoms, more opportunities than we have known in 3,000 years of the history of our people. And yet, with all America's achievements on the road toward justice, we know that we have a long way to go to fully realize the promises of our founding documents. We stand here on the grounds of Monticello, keenly aware that the author of this great vision of equality and freedom own slaves, housed quite near where we are gathered, reminding us all too painfully of the struggle with racism that has burdened this great nation for far too long. Today, in education, in employment, in our justice system, in the voting booth, African Americans still face challenges others do not. The challenge of racism may be the deepest our nation faces, but it is far from the only one. Equal pay for equal work between the genders still eludes us. The disabled still face too many barriers at too many turns. The gap between the rich and the poor in America is the highest in the developed world. Protecting God's creation remains an urgent priority for all humanity. And in a changing world, how we should most effectively maintain America's tradition of engagement with and leadership in the broader global community confronts us anew. So too the current controversy over our refugee and immigration policies. The country is divided on how best to balance our security needs with maintaining a policy of a welcoming climate for refugees and asylum seekers. Will we be able to continue the vision of Emma Lazarus, whose poetic words inscribed on the Statue of Liberty helped transform that statue into a symbol of our welcoming embrace of people just like you, just like so many naturalized citizens who have gathered here today, including my friends Kazir and Ghazala Khan, and my own great-grandparents. Over the last six generations of American history, those words welcome refugees to America. It reads, her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Cries she with silent lips, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming soil, send these, the homeless tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. We as a nation are wrestling with whether these words by Emma Lazarus will still ring true today and tomorrow. You will soon become citizens, and you too must play your part in helping us address these very real challenges. And in addressing these challenges, whether you do so as Democrats, Republicans, independents, or supporters of smaller parties, whether you favor liberal solutions or conservative or moderate solutions, do so ever mindful of the fundamental rights of all to be heard. Listen to those who differ. Be open to wisdom from others, no matter what their views. Look always for common ground on which we can build in tone and in substance towards the goal of E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one. Now, those mid-20th century extraordinary decades of robust interpretation by our courts and Congress of our fundamental rights, civil liberties and civil rights, also marked the era when the United States helped forge a consensus on the meaning of human rights as an international norm. Embodied in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, whose writing Eleanor Roosevelt played such an important role, and the International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights, is America's vision of fundamental liberties and freedom as a birthright of every human being. For over 2 years, I was blessed with the honor of serving as a United States Ambassador at Large. Ambassador at Large, a fancy term for an ambassador with global responsibilities for international religious freedom. Traveling the globe, promulgating international accords for religious freedom, I saw firsthand what the Pew Research Center tells us in its yearly global statistics. Most countries give religious freedom, but amongst those that restrict it are some of the most populous nations on earth, and therefore three-fourths of the world's population lives in countries where either they face government restrictions and repressive laws, such as blasphemy laws, or they face social hostilities, often from religious extremists using violence against those whose religious beliefs and practices they find offensive. I am confident that Thomas Jefferson, with his international interests, his vision of universal human rights, would be so immensely proud of what America is doing for the cause of religious freedom and its work in mobilizing other nations to stand up for oppressed minorities. Across the world, America is seen as the gold standard of religious freedom. In every corner of the world where religious persecution or other human rights violations prevail, Jefferson's words, "All men are created equal," was a cherished talisman of hope in the face of despair. I saw firsthand the power of those words to nourish, to sustain, to inspire dreams of freedom throughout the world. As Muhtar Kent observed here in 2011, there is no containing these words. No mere border, no barrier of language can stop them. No dictator, no army, no secret police can silence them. Not now, not ever. And this is just one key reason why we cannot remain silent today when we see historic Christian Yazidi and other communities in Iraq and Syria being subjected to genocidal efforts by ISIL, when we see Baha'is in Iran, Tibetan Buddhists in China, Shia Muslims in Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Bahrain, Rohingya Muslims in Burma, all victims of governmental or societal discrimination, harassment, persecution, physical attacks. My friends, to the religiously oppressed in every land who live in fear, afraid to speak of their beliefs, who worship in underground churches, mosques, or temples, lest authorities discover their devotion to an authority beyond the state, who languish in prisons, bodies broken, spirits too often disfigured, simply because they love God in their own way or question the existence of God, who feel so desperate that they flee their homes to avoid killing and persecution because of their faith. for all of them. Jefferson's legacy calls for us to be a beacon of hope and light. What I have learned so clearly in my four decades of religious and moral advocacy to government and society is that on all these issues and more, someone will decide. Our only choice is whether we will be the audience watching others make those decisions, or we will help be the authors of those decisions. No matter what your views, if you remain silent, in the vacuum of your silence will come voices that do not share your values, your dreams, your aspirations. Dr. Martin Luther King used to say, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. You arrived here this morning as honored guests. In a few moments, you will go forward as citizens of the United States of America. Do so with confidence, for with your help, America will continue to bend the arc towards justice. For this I know with certainty, with all the problems and challenges America and the world faces, we are not the prisoners of a bitter and unremitting past. Rather, if we stand together, e pluribus unum, we can be, we must be, we will be the shapers of a better and more hopeful future for your children, for America's children, for children all over the world. Let that be the blessing of this July 4th gathering and the blessing of your new lives in all your years to come.
Thank you, Ambassador Saperstein, for welcoming our newest citizens and for challenging us, citizens native-born and naturalized, to stand together in the spirit of E Pluribus Unum. Now I extend a warm welcome to the Honorable Michael Urbanski, Chief Judge of the United States District Court for the Western District of Virginia, who will preside over the naturalization ceremony. Judge Urbanski is joined by United States Attorney Rick Mountcastle and Chief Deputy of the U.S. Marshals Service Brad Sellers, who will now open the court.
All rise. The Honorable Michael F. Urbanski, Chief Judge for the United States District Court, is presiding. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States District Court for the Western District of Virginia is now in session and open for the transaction of business. God save these United States and this honorable court. Please be seated and come to order.
Good morning. My name is Mike Urbanski. I'm the Chief Judge of the United States District Court for the Western District of Virginia. I've held this job for exactly one day. This is my first official act. And given that much of our work is so dismal, this is a great day, and I am just so thrilled to be here to swear in these new citizens. What could be better? What could be better? I want to thank President Bowman, Chairman King, for their warm welcome and for inviting the United States District Court for the Western District of Virginia to, again, participate in this very important ceremony. I'd like to now call upon the Acting United States Attorney for the Western District of Virginia, my friend Rick Mountcastle, who has a motion to present.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Would the applicants for citizenship please rise? Your Honor, on behalf of the United States of America, I present to the court these 74 applicants for citizenship. And I would ask that the applicants would, if they would please join us on the portico. Judge Urbanski, it gives me great pleasure to inform this court that the individuals standing before me have filed applications for naturalization with the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. It's been determined that each is eligible for naturalization, and the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services has approved their naturalization applications. Pursuant to Section 310B of the Immigration and Nationality Act, I hereby move this court to administer the oath of allegiance, and upon completion of the administration of the oath, to present each candidate before me with a certificate of naturalization. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Mountcastle. The court will grant the motion for admission to citizenship for all of these new naturalized citizens. And I would ask that you all please raise your right hand at this time and take the following oath of citizenship. And I want all of you out there in the audience to pay attention to this oath, because while it means so much and they've memorized it and they understand what these obligations are in the oath, it's important for all of us to pay attention to what our obligations are as United States citizens. Y'all repeat after me. I hereby declare on oath that I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity to any foreign prince, potentate, state, or sovereignty of whom or which I have heretofore been a subject or citizen, that I will support and defend the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I will bear arms on behalf of the United States when required by law, that I will perform non-combatant service in the armed forces of the United States when required by law, that I will perform work of national importance under civilian direction when required by law, and that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. So help me God. Well, let's have a round of applause for our new citizens. And place your hand over your heart for the presentation of the colors by the Lewis and Clark Fife and Drum Corps, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you may be seated. Thank you. I'm going to invite President Bowman and Ambassador Sapperstein to assist me in the presentation of the certificates of citizenship. And I'd like to ask Mr. Mountcastle to please come forward and introduce our new citizens.
Mohammed Gharib Salan Al-Azazi. Muhammad Asif Muhammad Kasem. Martha Nelly Ospina. Carlos Eduardo Ospina. Archuna Thakur. Jamyang Shodan. Claire Alyssa Sleep. Rodrigo Lopez. Tashi Shoadon. Ahmed Shah. Ida Ugale Tabilas. Amandeep Sandhu. Gloria de Los Angeles Rauda Galdamez. Nawel Smith Becerra. Tina Shukiao Chai. Narus Amadi. Dave Pakarin. Victor Andres Zarate Bustamante. Kaylee Marie Powell. Adrian Dumitru Paraska. Bieta Elizabeth Boost Rose. Juan Carlos Becerra. Glenda Armida Scott. Arturo Felipe Urieta Molina. Miriam Irirach. Gyokan Dennis Dietman. Vishal Gupta. Ashley Rihanna Sterling. Jawanza Joshua Gomez, Camille Andrea Gomez, Maria Floribel Benito Rissell, Rosa Lizette Lopez Gonzalez, Jawanza Joshua Gomez.
All right, we got you. Congratulations. Thank you. All right.
Camille Andrea Gomez.
We'll get this.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Nyok Khan T. Nguyen.
Congratulations. Thank you. Sorry, guys. We'll get you.
Chantavut Sarai. Nino Mkhedlashvili. Konstantin Kutsisvili. Dietlinde Mazel. Kyung Suk Kim. Okay, this is Dr. Pinar Pazuk Sanfort. Amna Khan. Leika Ahmed Khan.
Congratulations.
Leo Sandoval.
Look at this. Leo, congratulations.
Judith Teresa Bonnet.
Hey, we got you. Congratulations.
Lila Dar Gimire.
All right.
Now we're back on the line.
Congratulations, to you. Thank
you. Back to.
Yanjing Liu.
Okay.
Andrew Graham Cheatham.
Congratulations.
Well, Cynthia Catherine Stevenson.
Congratulations.
Kilumba Kalenga Rue.
Yes. Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank
you. Ashish
Thank
Kumar Singh.
Congratulations.
Melesio Elizaga Toledo III. Helen Kakubi Luamba. Omid Azizula Amiri. Gareth James Bernard McAdam. Athena Mirella Talavera Patak.
Congratulations, welcome.
Christian Horatio Meza.
Good morning, Christian. Congratulations. How about you?
Mateusz Janusz Sigiela.
Congratulations. Make sure that's you, okay?
Nora Marina Beteta Rojas.
Congratulations to you. Welcome.
Lydia Lopez.
Congratulations.
Mohammed Nassim Kasim.
Congratulations. Welcome. Nice to have you.
Barbara Ann Goff.
Congratulations. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Juan Luis Garcia Rivera.
There we go. Congratulations. Welcome.
Noor Nabil Khalil Alhamadani.
Congratulations. Welcome to you. There we go.
Diane Parisian.
Congratulations, welcome.
Paul Andre Parisian.
Congratulations, welcome.
Iris Sarai Strain.
Congratulations, welcome to you.
Elizaveta Lisa Shikoda.
How did you do on your name? Did you do well?
Kiati Delada.
Congratulations, welcome.
Sean Michael Horgan.
Thank you.
Douglas John Alexander Stevenson.
Congratulations.
Cameron Bastam.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Boris Majkic.
Congratulations. Congratulations. Welcome. There you go.
Aphrodita Veselaj Bizlimi.
Congratulations.
Most Shamsunahar Begum.
Congratulations.
Ahmed Mostafa Iqbal.
I'd like to now call upon the U.S. Army Chorus, who is going to sing for us the national anthem. Please rise. And place your hand over your heart for the playing of the national anthem. Thank you.
Oh, say can you see? So proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets' red glare bursting in air gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free?
Thank you so much to the U.S. Army Chorus, and I'd like to, y'all please be seated. I'm sure with regard to our fellow citizens, our new citizens, let me just say for the first time, welcome and my fellow citizens. How does that sound? You know, as I said earlier, sometimes democracy is messy, and, you know, we've seen a little bit of that this morning. But guess what? We got it done. Congratulations. All of us here, on behalf of the United States District Court for the Western District of Virginia, and on behalf of all of these folks out here, we're really very proud of you. With your permission, I'm going to tell you a very brief story. Almost 100 years ago, two young men, boys really, saw America for the first time from a ship in New York Harbor. These two boys, traveling alone on different ships, came to America from Eastern Europe through Ellis Island. I often wonder what they thought as they glimpsed Lady Liberty standing proudly in the harbor with her torch of freedom and opportunity held high. I wonder what they thought their futures held in this new land, forged on principles of individual rights, equality, and representative government by and for the people. Each of these two young men settled in the coal mining region of eastern Pennsylvania, worked hard as coal miners and farmers, survived World War I and the Great Depression, and raised families. The lives of these two men intertwined when their oldest children met, fell in love, and got married. I tell you this story because the children of these newcomers to America were my parents. You see, your story and the stories of your children and grandchildren to come is my story. As a nation of immigrants, it is indeed the story of all of us. Today you join a new family, our American family, a family built on principles of hard work, individual freedom,
tolerance, and personal responsibility. But I challenge you today to remember that you are not just responsible for yourselves. You now, as new citizens, are responsible to ensure that the ideals set forth in the Declaration of Independence, the preamble that was read so ably by Judge Thomas, the Constitution, and the pledge that you are about to recite for the first time, or did we do that already? We did that. All right. Sorry. I tell you, things are messed up. Remains firm and true. So I charge you today with not just taking care of yourselves and your families, but getting involved in your community and helping other citizens continue to keep America the greatest nation on earth. America is truly a beacon on a hill, a beacon of freedom, hope, and prosperity. And you now have an important role as citizens in making sure that the light of that beacon continues to burn bright. Get involved in your community, your schools, your government, and understand that along with the privilege of citizenship comes the responsibility to preserve, protect, and defend the principles upon our nation was based. That's why each of you have completed training in American history and government. It is because now you are part of that history, part of that culture, and part of that government. You see, as a citizen, you no longer can look upon our government as some isolated entity. As a citizen, our government is made up of each of us, of all of us, and each and every one of you have a vital role to play in helping to keep the promise of this great nation. Now, enough talking by me. If any of you would like to say anything to your fellow citizens, to your friends and family that are gathered here, I welcome your comments and would like to call upon you to say a few words and let us know how you're feeling now as citizens of this great nation. Somebody's got to be first. All right, I'm going to have Mr. Mountcastle call on you. I know some of you want to say something. There we go.
Hello. My name is Lisa. I came to the United States from Ukraine when I was 17. And I really didn't know what's going to happen or how my life is going to turn out to be. And I'm just very proud and honored to be here today. I have met very incredible people along the way, people who were kind, supportive, encouraging, people who believed in me, and people who just resonate love. And I'm just so grateful for those people, many of whom are here today or watching online, for being there for me in my life. And I'm thankful to my family, who is back in Ukraine and who I haven't seen in many years, but who've been always very supportive and understanding of me. And I thank all of you for being here today to support us. That means a lot to have so many people here today. And I thank the United States and its people for, in a way, officially adopting me and taking me in. And I promise to continue to work hard to enrich the community, to give back to the United States and its people for the wonderful life I've been given, the life that I could have never even hoped for or dreamed of growing up back in Ukraine, for all of these opportunities and hope and freedom. So I thank you all for that, and it's my honor today to become the first generation American in my family. Thank you.
My name is Marta Ospina. I'm born in Colombia. When I was very young, my dream was to be here. Today, my dream is a wonderful dream. My family is here. I have two daughters, two grandsons, and I am very happy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My name is Dietlinde Turban-Mazel. I'm originally from Germany. And I would like to thank my late husband, a very significant American citizen, the conductor and composer Lauren Mazel, who introduced me to this country 33 years ago when we met and taught me how to understand and appreciate its tremendous values. I always had a hunger to go and live in this country standing for freedom, especially coming from a post-Second World War Germany that was still kind of written by guilt feelings to a certain extent. So I'm tremendously grateful that I already was able to live here for 3 decades, and my 3 beautiful children have made Virginia their home. And I want to continue the work that my husband did. And other than in the field of music, he was a very engaged citizen. He took the New York Philharmonic to Pyongyang, for example, as a first step of possibly diplomatically opening. And I would like to continue along those lines. Thank you all very, very, very much. I'm very touched and honored to be here.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mohammad Asim Mohammad Qasim. I am from Afghanistan. I have been here 6 years. I feel here freedom. I like people. I respect American people. Also, I like my people. I want peace in Afghanistan and all the world. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kiyati, and I'm Indian and now American. I would like to thank my parents because 6 years ago they packed their bags and moved here so that my brother and I can go to college here, we can go to school and make a better life and get a good life. So today my brother, he is in college. I have graduated. I've gotten a good job. My parents didn't know what they would do 6 years ago, but now they're successful. They have good jobs. They're living, you know, they're living their dreams. So I would like to thank America and the American people and everyone, not just American people, but every single immigrant here and their families. Thank you for accepting us, and thank you for making us a part of this country and giving us good opportunities. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. My name is Nawroz Ahmadi. I am from Afghanistan. When I was 11 years old, I went to Iran. I worked for 15 days from the mountain to the Iran. And then I was working in Iran for 6 years. And then I was walked to Turkey for 11 days from Iran to Turkey. And then after Turkey on 2011, June 2011, I came here. Now, today is the very special day for me. I'm so happy. I'm becoming a citizenship. I'm becoming American. Thank you, everybody.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ashley. I'm originally from Jamaica, but I've been here for 12 years. It's really been a long journey from starting in elementary school and officially being a student at UVA, one of the best universities in the world. I really want to thank America for being basically raising me. It's been my home for all these years, and I'm so proud to officially be able to call myself an American. And I'd love to thank everyone who's opened their arms to me and welcomed me to this beautiful country. Thank you.
Hey, guys. I'm Amna, originally from Pakistan. We came here around 8 years ago, and just wanted to thank my dad, my mom, and my uncle, Nadeem Mamu, who opened his doors for us when we were here, didn't really have any house or anything like that. But like now, like I'm in my fourth year finishing up at UVA, and but yeah, thank you so much, everyone. I love Charlottesville, and go Hoos.
Okay, last chance. Anybody else have any words you'd like to say? All right.
Hi, everybody. My name is Gökhan Denizlikmen. I'm from Turkey. I am very excited right now to being here. I've been in this country almost 12 years, and I want to thank all my close friends helped me in this journey here. First of all, Daphne, and then place that I worked, Clifton Inn Hotel, 6 years. Now I am doing my business here. I have a restaurant in Charlottesville, Turkish restaurant. And the main reason I stand up right now, because my wife is watching me from Turkey right now. I want to say her, I love you, baby. I love you, Canan. Seni seviyorum, aşkım. Thank you. I am so proud of being American.
Anybody else? Did you want to say something, young man? All right, come on up.
Madam President, Mr. Judge, distinguished personalities of the dais, and all Americans, it's my honor and privilege to be here this morning. I came all the way from India to attend this program. Believe me, I traveled more than 24 hours from India to here. I'm a lawyer of Supreme Court in my country, and I have been considering President Jefferson as my ideal, not only now, since 25 years. And being a lawyer, I have brought this picture of my office, Mr. Judge. I, being a lawyer, sitting in my office at the right-hand side, is a photograph of Mr. Jefferson. This is a proof of my treating him as my ideal, because he is a person who framed the Constitution of this country, and I try to advocate the Founding Fathers' vision of democracy, the equality, the justice, and so many things. President Kennedy has rightly described him when he, being elected as the President of the United States of America, invited all Nobel laureates of the United States. And in pre-dinner speech, he described Mr. Jefferson as, "It's a rare occasion in the history of White House when such talented personalities dined here, except on one occasion when Jefferson dined here alone." And he rightly described it. Thank you very much for giving this opportunity. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your travels. I won't ask if anything broke down on the way from India. With that, if none of our new citizens have any other comments, I'd like to ask the marshal to adjourn court.
All rise. By direction of His Honor, this United States District Court stands adjourned for the day.
Please be seated. I want to thank the court, and I want to especially thank our nation's newest citizens. Bravo. This is our favorite day of the year at Monticello because you remind us of the real meaning of this holiday, why it is we celebrate with fireworks and family and picnics. So now I have a question for the audience. Our thanks to you for being with us this morning and supporting this ceremony. I'm going to ask you to support our new citizens in our community, so please answer with a resounding "we do." Do you promise to assist our newest citizens in fulfilling the duties and enjoying the rights of American citizenship in our community?
We do.
Good job. And for those of you who wish to pledge anew your own commitment to this still young, hopeful, visionary nation, we invite you to join us in an affirmation of your citizenship. It's on page 5 of your program. If you wish to do so, I invite you to please stand, raise your right hand, and read with me the oath. As an American citizen, whether by birth or by choice, I pledge to uphold the responsibilities of my citizenship, to participate in my community, to strengthen my bonds with fellow citizens, and to realize the ideals of the Declaration of Independence, to honor life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, not only for myself, but for all. Thank you. Now please join in singing America the Beautiful, led by Charlottesville opera soloist Linda Hines. I think you probably know the words, but just in case, they're at the bottom of page 7. Please be seated. On behalf of the foundation, I once again congratulate our newest citizens and their families on a monumental accomplishment. Well done. For adding immeasurably to this ceremony, I also want to thank Ambassador Saperstein, Judge Urbanski, and the court party, the Coca-Cola Corporation, the Edward W. and Betty Knight Scripps Foundation, Mr. and Mrs. Brent Halsey, Steve Lehman and the Charlottesville Municipal Band, the United States Army Chorus, the Lewis and Clark Fife and Drum Corps, Linda Hines and the Charlottesville Opera, the Daughters of the American Revolution, and our community partners, the Daily Progress, the Charlottesville Radio Group, Tranlin, and the Piedmont Virginia Community College. In the spirit of independence, we encourage all citizens, new and old, to exercise your right to vote. The Albemarle County Registrar, yes! The Albemarle County Registrars and the League of Women Voters can help you take that first step at the registration table located to your left. Today's ceremony will conclude with a performance by our beloved Charlottesville Municipal Band under the leadership of the esteemed Steve Lehman. We hope you'll stay for our Jeffersonian open house and enjoy Coke floats, children's activities, and patriotic music from the youth orchestras of Central Virginia. I also invite you to join us at the rear of the West Lawn for a final performance by the Lewis and Clark Fife and Drum Corps, which will begin shortly after this ceremony. These fantastic young musicians came all the way from Missouri to be part of our ceremony today. If you need further assistance, staff are wearing red shirts with the Monticello logo. But lastly, I want to thank a very special group of people. I want to acknowledge the 400 staff and volunteers who never have a holiday on July 4th. The staff and the volunteers of Monticello gladly and happily give up that holiday so that we can share it with you. Thank you. Thank you for coming today. Thank you for cheering on our newest citizens. Happy Independence Day.
Thank you.